two of these. So the Feynman path integral, which is just z of some source, j, 1 over n, integral over some field, e to the isc, and string theory have one thing in common. Okay. And that is that they are both theories of nothing, especially string theory. I won't discuss string theory, but I'm going to talk about the Feynman path integral here. In Minkowski space, it is not a well-defined mathematical expression. The integral is not absolutely convergent. It's e to the I something, and the modulus of this is 1, and you integrate over an infinite dimensional space. It just doesn't make sense. And here's a two-dimensional example where that's not really infinite, that's just ill-defined. So the actual definition of the path integral is done via the Euclidean path integral. And any construction, mathematical construction, goes via the Euclidean path integral with imaginary time. So e to the, no, I s Minkowski is replaced by some minus s Euclidean. T analytically continued to minus I tau, or tau is real Euclidean time. This d by dt goes like that, and the kinetic term, the two derivative term, becomes negative. And then, so if I have a scalar field, and Minkowski action is given by an expression like this, when I do these continuations to imaginary time, the kinetic term gains a minus sign. The other two already had minus signs, then you get minus s Euclidean. And then the Euclidean functional integral, defined like this, is potentially well-defined mathematically. And indeed, it can be constructed at least for certain two-dimensional theories. And this defines a measure on the space of field configurations. And at least p phi 2 is possible. Now, going back here, notice that this is e to the minus, and s Euclidean here is all positive. You need positive and real. However, you know, we might have complex fields, but you can express all fields in terms of their real parts, you know, real and imaginary parts. So this is all real up in the exponent. Now, sometimes, however, you get complex actions, even in Euclidean space. You can have parts which are imaginary. And if the Minkowski action has a term which is t odd, its analytic continuation to Euclidean space generally has an imaginary term, remains imaginary. Fermions is a good example where they contribute to the path integral with a factor that is real, but it can be negative. It's not e to the minus something positive. And this, so this corresponds, in a sense, to an imaginary part, which is I pi. Right? And so generally, these terms that are t odd come from topological terms, the Chern-Simons term we heard about today. And that's the case I'm going to study. West-Sumino terms, any sort of epsilon-related terms, all of these are, the theta term and so on. Here I've given explicit expressions for them. Now, such terms are linear in time derivative. There's an epsilon, so d by dt appears once. So when you make the, you have a dt in the measure and you have d by dt once, this thing, the i's cancel. And so the I that's sitting out in front of the Minkowski action doesn't get canceled. And so the Euclidean version path integral will have e to the minus s Euclidean phi plus I times s topological. Okay, and this is quite general. Now, this is not an insurmountable problem for the proper mathematical definition of the functional integral. The real part can be used to define a measure. And then one integrates this bounded function against that measure, and that, in principle, does exist. So it's not like the theory is ill-defined. However, the usual perturbative paradigm, and when I look up, I don't. So the usual perturbative paradigm of quantum mechanics is to find the classical critical points and quantize the small oscillations around these critical points. And then cubic or nonlinear terms are treated as interactions. However, this fails. Imagine that we have written the action strictly in terms of real fields, which is always possible. There are, in general, no solutions to the equations of motion. And that's surely obvious. And if you look at the equations of motion, they're written in real fields. So this is ds Euclidean by d phi plus I. And there's no I's anywhere else. And this will not have a solution in general on the space of real fields. Now, there are special cases where these two terms will separately be zero, but that's not general. So we wanted to look at this problem in two cases. Well, in general, basically, we wanted to see if we could extract some general wisdom from studying some models. And unfortunately, we cannot, other than saying you have to go find the complex critical points. But we looked at the George-Glashow model with the Chern-Simons term in 2 plus 1 dimensions. And this model was actually the one that motivated this thought. And then we looked at a much easier one, abelian Higgs model with Chern-Simons term in 0 plus 1 dimensions. And that one we can solve exactly. So I think I'll talk something about this one. So the George-Glashow model with Chern-Simons term is defined by this Euclidean action. So there's the kinetic term. There's a scalar field. The scalar field is a triplet. It's an SO3 or SU2 gauge theory. There's a gauge covariant derivative kinetic term. There's a potential with symmetry breaking type. And here's the Chern-Simons term for the gauge field. And A mu A and H A are completely real fields. And each of these terms are written completely in terms of real fields. And the I sitting there is explicitly there. So variation of this action with respect to, the field equations do not have any solution. Well, trivial vacuum solution might be. OK, now in the Higgs phase, without the Chern-Simons term, the symmetry is spontaneously broken to U1 because of the symmetry breaking type potential. Right? And then the usual Higgs mechanism gives mass to the W pluses and minuses, which is like A1 plus IA2, and the Z0 is the photon and remains massless. And the vacuum solution is V, H equals V001, right? A mu equals 0. No Chern-Simons term. Right? And then quantized perturbative oscillations about the critical point gives rise to the U1 gauge theory, two charged massive vector bosons, and one neutral scalar. So this is the usual picture. Actually, Georgi and Glashow introduced this model as a Z-less Higgs model, Weinberg-Salon, weak interactions model. However, what I've said there is a lie. It's completely mistaken in 2 plus 1 dimensions. And the reason is contributions from quantum fluctuations about non-trivial critical points completely reorganizes the theory. And the U1 is actually confined. And this is the celebrated Polyakov result, which Rob Ley referred to in his talk. And these are the non-trivial critical points are instanton, so two Polyakov monopoles in this theory. And so the scalar field has this kind of radial x a hat is a radial vector hedgehog shape, and the gauge field has similar with an epsilon and some profile function phi of r. And these are solutions which are critical points of the Euclidean action. Now, Polyakov, taking into account the sort of interaction between these monopoles, there's a Coulomb-type interaction between them, showed that the electric field is actually confined. The monopole sort of gas condenses and screens the U1 gauge field. The photon becomes massive, and there are no massless excitations left in the theory. Now, what happens when you add the Chern-Simons term to the action? Well, the biggest change is that all vector bosons become massive. And moreover, the magnetic monopole solution is no longer possible. So this reorganization of the theory which Polyakov showed has to sort of be modified. And it was actually Affleck and collaborators who first considered this problem, what happens to the Polyakov result with the Chern-Simons term added. And they did not look for complex critical points, but their analysis was sort of more global. They said, well, this part defines a perfectly good measure on the space of real field configurations, and then e to the is Chern-Simons. It's just a bounded function that we can, in principle, integrate. But the point was that the Chern-Simons term is not really gauge invariant. And there are certain sort of gauge-like transformations, essentially gauge transformations that don't go to identity at infinity, which integrating over those gives destructive interference, and the contribution from monopole sectors just vanishes. And so you don't have any monopoles, and the usual Higgs-like description is valid. Now, here I've done in detail what it is. The change under a gauge transformation of the Chern-Simons term is this usual topological term, which gives rise to quantization of this coefficient. But there's also this additional term, which is a surface term and usually neglected. But in the presence of a monopole, it contributes. And so the transformations in question are U is e to the I lambda of R, and then it's in sort of the around the hedgehog direction of the monopole. And lambda of 0 is 0. Lambda of infinity is some constant equal to lambda. And this is a gauge transformation when this lambda is 2 pi or 2 n pi, but otherwise it is not. And what am I doing for time? When it is 2 n pi e to the I s, Chern-Simons is invariant for a quantized coefficient. But if lambda is not equal to 2 pi, the transformation is a zero mode of the monopole and not a gauge transformation. It should be integrated over. And that, so that it, you don't really need the solution of the monopole, just the sector. This will apply in the whole monopole sector. And the form of lambda is actually constrained by gauge fixing. And then the normal part of the Euclidean action is simply invariant, integrating over this asymptotic degree of freedom. And this is really just the dionic degree of freedom, but in 3 Euclidean dimensions, or 2 plus 1, there is no, you can't make it time dependent. There is no time, so there is no dion. But it is a zero mode of the monopole. It just projects delta monopole number 0. Right? So you have no monopoles. Okay, and this result seems to be correct. However, there's other work that indicates that monopoles, it's correct and confers with other results that monopoles are not solutions of the full theory, and monopole-antimonopole pairs seem to be bound with linear confinement. So if you look at field configurations where you have a monopole-antimonopole pair, confinements, okay, as you separate, then the action goes up linearly. But now, this implies that a dilute gas of monopoles, antimonopoles, is not possible. And so the mechanism of confinement of Polyakov is lost, and the classical behavior of charged particles should be recovered. And the Chern-Simons term gives the photon a mass. Coulomb interaction is short-ranged anyway. Classical logarithmic confinement is lost. And the effect of complex term in the action radically changes the spectrum of the theory. However, the critical point of only a part of the action is sort of, well, to me, not satisfactory. And it is possible that the results are deceiving, as we will see, hopefully, in 3 minutes. Now, Hosotani, Saririan, and Tikhon looked in detail at the transformation, in particular Lorentz gauge, and they found that this lambda of R has to be in Lorentz gauge to satisfy exactly this equation. And this is just the Gribov equation. So if lambda of infinity is 2 pi, that just gives the Gribov copy. But otherwise, the lambda of R has to satisfy this equation. And lambda of infinity is sort of determined from lambda of 0. And they showed that there are the range of allowed lambda at infinity is constrained. It happens to be between minus 3.98 and plus 3.98. And I have no understanding of this result. I was able to reproduce it numerically, but for some reason, the asymptotic value, you can't integrate over it freely, as Affleck et al. Suggested. And so that adds sort of a doubt into why the Affleck result should be correct. Okay, so this is the picture I'm going to skip over. That's lambda at infinity. It's a simple pendulum model. So Hosotani also found solutions which are critical points of the full action, and these will be complex monopole solutions. There are only numerical solutions that are found. And when you're in complex space, field space, there is no Gribov ambiguity. The gauge is fixed on the space of real configurations, and then you generalize to complex configurations, and it's unclear how, what is the notion of gauge invariance on complex configurations. So the, according to them, what needs to be done is that the functional integration contour needs to be deformed to pass through those complex critical points and to see if that reproduces the Affleck result. Now, this is just too hard with the 3+1 in the 2+ in the Georgi Glashow phase, so we looked at this simpler model, which is the abelian Higgs model in 0+1 dimensions. So all it is a complex scalar field with a mass term. You could put a potential here, but we want it solvable, so we just take quadratic. And there's a covariant derivative, so you can change the phase of phi as a function of time locally. And we took compact Euclidean time, maybe you can take beta to infinity at the end, and we take sort of the same gauge choice that d tau a is equal to 0, which says a is just a constant. But there are topologically non-trivial gauge transformations for the circle given by that, and a just shifts by that, so by a constant, that tau should not be there. So a just shifts by a constant. So you can do these transformations to bring a to lie between 0 and 2 pi over beta, and it's periodic. And the Chern-Simons term is not invariant under this transformation. You get this extra bit. So the only way is that lambda is integer, right, for invariance of the Chern-Simons term. So you have even quantization of the coefficient. Now, the equations of motion, when you vary, it's just this scalar field equation. And the gauge field equation is some integrated thing. But look, it has to form some imaginary term from the Chern-Simons term plus alpha over delta. And so the solution is a complex critical point for the gauge field. Now, the scalar field equation actually has no solution on the space of periodic scalar fields. However, you can do the functional integral over the scalar fields exactly. So you just Fourier decompose the scalar field in terms of these phi n, and then you just have a sort of Gaussian functional integral for each phi n, and the functional integral over the scalar field is this infinite product. And of course, it's not particularly well defined, but you normalize it relative to a equals 0, and you get this product, which you can find exactly how to do that determinant by methods Jacquive, Dunn, and Lee, and Liu figured out. And you find that the scalar functional integral just gives you this, which is sort of an effective action for this gauge field. And you have this complex bit up there. And so one should, the functional integral that we're left with is that. Right? And there's a slight analogy with the integration over A of infinity with Affleck et al. And well, I'm not going to say that, but integrating over the lambda because of this should, well, in Affleck it projects onto n equals 0, and here it will project onto the minus n Fourier component of that. And our functional integral can actually be done exactly. And so that's just a simple contour integration with the variable change at the bottom. And the result is it's 2 pi over beta tan hyperbolic beta m over 2 times that. I mean, that's the exact answer. However, we can look at it as a path integral over the gauge field, where f of a, that was just the log of that expression. And now I want to do it by 0. No, no, no. No questions. Yes, yes. Critical points are given by the derivative equals 0. And you can actually solve for these critical points. They're just, well, they're these ugly things. Right? And so in terms of z, there are just 2. But in terms of a, there are an infinite sequence of critical points. And then I think I have a picture. So the original integration, this is the space A, is along the red line. And then these critical points are up here, and then they're periodic. And there's critical points down here. And you have to figure out which way you have to go. And you integrate up along the imaginary axis across here and down here. And that way you pass through the critical point. And so the answer, well, when you do the saddle point approximation, it's always of this form. It's the action evaluated at the critical point, and then 1 over the f double prime. And you do that, and you find in this approximation that it gives you e to the minus n beta m times a factor. And so this is the determinantal factor. And if this does not seem to come out perfectly right. And so I don't understand why. This is written in the large beta limit. On the other hand, if you do look for the critical points just along the real, just of the real part of the action, you just get A critical is 0. And then this thing is just 1 at double prime, and you get something that just has completely the wrong dependence on N. And so that's about it. So the conclusion is that it seems that the saddle point approximation with just the real part of the action does not give the right answer. The deforming the contour, going through the corresponding critical points, it's the right procedure, though the question of this determinant factor is not clear. And the question of what is the appropriate gauge invariance for complexified field configuration needs to be found out. And certainly a better understanding of what's going on around the complex monopoles should be done. OK.